3 Steps Forward, a podcast designed to help us grow as Jews, just a few steps at a time. In each episode, we will meet one interesting and thoughtful person with one or two pieces of useful advice to give. Our goal is to be both spiritually ambitious and humble. We really believe that we can accomplish great things if we take it just a few steps at a time. All right. I have the pleasure of being joined by the very patient and wonderful Rabbi Kurtz, who has stood with me through some difficult...
In the second cut, now we're up to the third cut, it was venerable before.
So. It was also venerable. Also, I think the patient might rank higher.
You know, in the pulpit, you have to learn how to give accolades and gratuitous titles to people.
I don't know, I thought that was pretty good. So Rabbi Kurtz, who is a really wonderful and good guy, which I think is a pretty good accolade. He's also the assistant rabbi at Agudat Shalom in Stanford. He's the author of a really fascinating book called Challenging Assumptions. He hosts a podcast called Shoot First, Ask Questions Later about responsa literature.
Which your rabbi has been featured on.
Which I've had the pleasure and the honor of being featured on. He's also the author of an ongoing series on tradition online called Unpacking the Igrot. I have that right, yes?
You got that right.
Introducing Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's most famous pieces to the American audience, maybe the English reading audience, or English speaking audience, rather. Rabbi Kurtz, first of all, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. I want to ask you, if you don't mind, you mentioned to me a really interesting idea you had about the distinction between passion and fascination that was sparked by Jerry Seinfeld's recent commencement speech. I know you're always listening to commencement speeches all day. That's what you do for a living. Would you please just elaborate for us?
Yeah, I should also give a disclaimer. Like, I'm not like the biggest husset of Jerry Seinfeld, but I couldn't help but notice, as I'm sure many of your listeners have probably noticed, that Jerry Seinfeld's commencement speech made headlines recently.
Yes,
now,
yes,
mainly, so. Not so much because of the speech and as much as the protests and the walkouts that took place because of Rahman al-Islam, God forbid a Jewish guy gets up there to speak nowadays at a college commencement. But a lot of people didn't pay a lot of attention to the content of his speech. And surprisingly, it was a little bit more profound than one might expect from a comedian. And I know this by way of...
I think you just insulted all the comedians who listen, of which there are many, I have no doubt.
Katasia Visi Pashati. So, Carlos Usada, who is a New York Times contributor, commentator, I was listening to a podcast. It's called Matter of Opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what it sounds like.
It's about a bunch
of New York Times contributors talking about their opinions. And I listen to that when I clean my apartment on Fridays, getting ready for Shabbos. So if you want to figure out how close to the buzzer I figure out my drusha, there you go. While I'm cleaning for Shabbos, I'm listening to a podcast, getting ideas.
Okay.
So Jerry Seinfeld, it may have been a throwaway line. I don't even know if this is pshat in what he meant. But he said that, you guys, what we say nowadays is that follow your dreams and follow your passions.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that's erroneous. Don't follow your passions. Find something that you are fascinated by. Now, what does that mean to be fascinated? So there was no Rashi on the spot over there. There was no art scroll to tell me what that meant. It could have just been two synonyms, and he was just throwing out words, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But Hagon HaRav Carlos Uzada suggests, and this might be more of a drash than a pshat, possibly, that passion is something that is fleeting. One day I wake up and I am very passionate about whatever is popular these days, about a certain brand, about a certain game. Fascination is, let's say you're someone who is interested in cosmology. So the more you study about a neutron star, the more you learn about black holes, the more you learn how when you get to a singularity, the physics and the math no longer makes any sense. For someone like me, who's not even I'm not an expert. I do this on a layman's level.
Mm-hmm.
My appreciation goes stronger and stronger. My fascination becomes deeper with the more I learn. Whereas passion is something that I'm excited about one day, and then it burns out the next day. And I think, you know, when it comes to Judaism, we say hafoch ba hafoch ba deku ba, the Mishnah Avos. The more we turn the pages, the more we notice how much the Torah has to offer us. So I'll give you just two brief examples. One is on Pesach, I was learning the Tshuvos in Igros Moshe about Rav Moshe Feinstein's approach to end of life. Some of his most important Tshuvos about patient autonomy, about quality of life, how to make end of life decisions. But, you know, I figured I would just kind of browse through the rest of the volume, Choshe Mishpach Chelek Beis. And in there, I came by this small little throwaway Tshuva, Simchah Beis, I believe it was, in which there's a question, Tavshin Lamed Beis, 1971, I think it was, or 72, about a Jewish community in a place called Forest Hills, in the, maybe the Texas people don't know about it, maybe you're familiar, so in Queens, New York. And they're asking him that the demographics of the community were changing, and they thought that it would be less hospitable, let's just put it this way, delicately, for the Jewish people who are living there. And I was like thinking to myself, I'm like, what happened in 1971 in Forest Hills? So I just put in the keywords into Google, and I see that, what do you know, an archive news article, a few of them, talking about how there was a controversy about public housing being put in Forest Hills and place in Queens at the time. And here you have a Tshuva of Moshe Feinstein, which is a snapshot of Jewish and American history, advising Jewish people on how to stay strong and how to weather these, you know, these changes in their conditions. So that was one thing. But then you could also just go back many years. Let's rewind to the times of the Bible. Rewind back to Tanakh. We have a Jewish book club at our shul.
Nice.
So we did Rabbi Dr. Joshua Berman's Animami, which is a very important work because he takes what is a more esoteric area of academia and he makes it understandable for people like me to appreciate how it's not just in it, what he would argue permissible, but even necessary to understand the Torah in its historical ancient Near Eastern context. And one example that really drove it home for me was when he has, I can't show it to your listeners, but on one of the pages in his chapter on the Exodus, he has a diagram which shows how the Mishkan, the tabernacle's architecture, was strikingly similar to Ramses II's battle compound.
Yes, I recall that.
So that was like, oh my, and when you see the pictures, you know, look it up for yourselves if you can get access to it. I was like, whoa. And then he makes this argument that it was the Jewish way of repudiating the Egyptians who had enslaved in their way of life. And this, these are just like two random examples that come to mind of like the more you flip through the pages, hafokhba, fokhba, dekulaba, you know, Torah should not just be a passion. You know, many people, on the one hand, if someone never came to shul in their life and they start coming on the holidays and they start coming for Yisker, that's a wonderful thing and we should be, you know, singing their praises. But at a certain point, one needs to realize that Judaism isn't just something I do one day and not the next. I'm not just passionate about Judaism one day, but Judaism is about consistency. The most important sukkim in the Torah, arguably, is not Shema Yisrael. It's not the Hafarecha Kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself, which everyone misinterprets for political reasons. But actually, Recha is exclusive, okay, we'll leave that on the side. But it's actually about the Tumid offering that's brought once in the morning and once toward the evening, the afternoon. Judaism is about consistency. And the more consistently we learn Torah, the deeper our fascination and appreciation of it becomes. So my argument is, Torah is so broad and addresses so many things from history to modern day. If one is not yet fascinated by something in the Torah, chances are we just haven't learned enough of it yet.
So first of all, I love that.
Azoy stuck the helige of Jerry Seinfeld shlita.
Right, that's what he meant.
That was exactly what he meant.
That's what he meant. That's what he's talking about, which is great. And you got to love that. He gave a shiur over at Duke. But so I'm wondering how much of what you're saying is about finding what fascinates you versus developing a fascination. You know, how much does this compare to someone who sort of, you know, is just waiting to find the, you know, he likes chocolate, and you know, maybe as he tastes chocolate, he'll find like a flavor he really likes, or maybe he's neutral on most chocolates, but now he found something he enjoys, versus developing a taste for it like wine, which is something that typically comes, you know, a little bit later in life. You have to experience different wines, etc. And that's something that you develop. So what do you have in mind when you talk about finding fascination?
So I think, Rabbi Sprung, the development point is 100% on point. We say Vaharavna every morning. When we make a blessing on the Torah, for the Torah we're going to learn that day, we ask God to make it sweet. Because the understanding that especially when you're getting the gears turning for the first time, it's not going to be as smooth as it will be in the future. So even just basically, I didn't enjoy learning Gemara growing up because I realized, I mean, part of it is as one...
It wasn't written by Rav Moshe Feinstein.
Ah, there you go. But part is, you know, obviously one develops intellectually as they become older and they can appreciate the depth of it. But part is also when you go to Jewish day school, so much of Gemara learning is not actually Gemara learning. It's learning translation, mm-hmm. how to parse the words. And yeah, if that was all Torah was, I'd find that excruciatingly boring, which I did as a kid. And that explains why I didn't really find a lot of interest in it. But you're right. It's not always going to be easy. And this is something that I think needs to be said as well. So there's a phrase which... apparently Twitter gave me a slap on the hand for this one, a slap on the wrist. It was the AI that did it. They corrected 5 minutes later. Mm-hmm. I wrote, I was responding to someone. I said, maybe the whole Schwerz is Zion Yid. It's tough to be a Jew. Apparently Yid is also a slur, which they automatically fly.
Okay.
I thought Rav Moshe Feinstein was busy regulating Twitter over there. So on the one hand, Rav Moshe and many others pushed against this idea to say it's always tough to be a Jew. Mm-hmm. But now I find we have the opposite extreme. In many circles, people say it's geschmack to be a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to be, literally delicious. It's great to be a Jew.
It is, I agree.
And I think the truth lies somewhere in between. It's, you know, if you say it's just fair to say, it's tough to be a Jew, it's not worth it,
mm-hmm.
that's not true. There's a lot of meaning, and there's a lot we can appreciate the deeper we go in. But to say that things are always going to be geschmack, things are always going to be easy, I mean, where I am in life, I've only begun paying day school tuition.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it is schwer. That is difficult to do it, and I would never minimize that for anyone. So if one only emphasizes the geschmack aspect of it, then that's when you're in a moment of passion. That's when things are going well for you. But we recognize the same God. We say Baruch Dynamis as well, that we acknowledge that he's with us through the challenging times.
Mm-hmm.
And that God is not just with us for one point in the life cycle, not just during the happy times, not just during the sad times, but even in the typical monotonous day-to-day, that's the carbon tummy, that's the consistency, that's what Judaism is about. Not about those great glorious moments, but true heroism, arguably, is going to your 9-to-5 job, coming home, spending time with the family, going to Meyer, and being able to attend the rabbi's year.
Ah. Which, obviously, I would strongly recommend.
I thought I'd give you some way to...
Yeah,
some,
thank you. You're a good plug. So the only maybe pushback or counter view I might give you on that is I think that there is a special... And geschmack's a good word. There's a special geschmack in the developed, deepened, slower relationship. Right, and whether that's a relationship with a spouse or a close friend or a mentor, right? I think you can get to somewhere where it's a bit like a challenge, right? It's much deeper. There's much more flavor. Chicken soup's a good one, actually, right? The longer chicken soup spends on the stove, it's much deeper. And even though that doesn't mean you like every element of the chicken soup and every single thing is pleasant, overall, it's so much deeper. And that is a different kind of joy and pleasure and delight.
Yeah, I would. I don't think it's mutually exclusive, Rabbi Sprung. I think Elu. I didn't say it in the paternalistically. You know, if you say, I've actually heard people say invoke Elu ve'Elu Chaim. These are the words of the living God when they've lost an argument. One time, I remember I was sitting at a Shabbos meal with someone, and someone said, "Oh, it says this in the Parsha." Then my friend who's a Tanakh was like, quickly whips it out, points exactly to the source, and says, "The pasuk you cited is not what it says. It says that, right, or whatever it was." And the guy just looks at him blankly. 5 seconds pass, and he says, "Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim." And so I'm just like, That's not what it means, buddy. I think it was Nachum Leibovich who's attributed to said that there's 70 faces, not 71 faces. So
very good.
There's a limit to you to pluralism. How far you go?
Okay, fabulous.
But okay, Rabbi Sprung, anything else or?
Rabbi Kurtz, thank you for your time. To our listeners, please check out his book, Challenging Assumptions. Check out his podcast, Shoot First, Ask Questions
check
Later.
Check out Rabbi Sprung's episode on there.
Oh, very good. Good point. Don't miss it.
Malcolm Rabinovich.
He was just his yardsight.
Not that he needs our
That's a good point. That's a good point. And I thank you for your time. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking 3 steps forward with me. There is a wide and bright horizon ahead. Please review our podcast, and if you learned something new, share it with a friend. More episodes are on the way.